along the street and you see some money. You see a $100 bill lying on the sidewalk. And there's different things you can do. Ignore it because it's not yours. Pocket it because it doesn't seem to belong to anybody. Or try to find out who it belongs to. You probably will find a lot of people say it belongs to them. But, you know, it's a principle aside from everyone claiming, yes, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. Wait a minute. We have a, so it's a disposition of heart. How you regard objects of this world is return them to their proprietor. Krishna is the proprietor. Recognizing Krishna's proprietorship, because he's the source of everything, he's the proprietor of everything, then see everything as paraphernalia of the Lord to be used in his service. In that way, that kind of detachment, that's complete. Everything is a facility for Krishna's service. Not, if it doesn't have Krishna's name tag on it, then I can put it in my pocket and walk down the street and become enriched. And then use it for sense gratification. So, renunciation is complete when in the mood of devotional service, seeing things in relation to Krishna's service. So now, after that beginning part comes this concluding part, is instructing not just the bhuktis, those who are sense gratifiers, he's instructing the yogis who want siddhis or mystic powers. So mystic powers, the previous verse explained, came to him because of his position of bhakti. Yet he didn't engage them. So Bharaj Pariksit wants to know, why not? And the why not is to instruct the yogis, don't perform whatever it is that you're doing, the Ashtanga yoga system, or the devotional process. It's like there are these groups of, I won't give the names, but there are some groups of people that say, sure, take whatever type of yoga you like. You like bhakti? Fantastic. Take bhakti. Here's the goal. To become one with the Supreme. You're like this? That's fine. You're like that? That's fine. You're like that one? That's fine. What's the goal? Become one with the Supreme. So now, that's the ambitious impersonalists. They want liberation. There are those that they want siddhis. They want mystic powers. So take the Ashtanga process or the Bhakti process, whatever, you know, whatever one you like. What's the goal? Mystic powers. And when the mystic powers come, you enjoy displaying those mystic powers like a child in a sandbox. Display the mystic powers. And what happens? People go, oh, you have mystic powers. Aggrandizement and honor. And some people will say, as Prabhupada is stating in the purport, foolish people say, that person must be God. And so they get many followers, because he's God. God on earth. How wonderful. And then take it a little bit further, and some persons advertise themselves. Well, they kind of have their followers advertise themselves. But they're advertising themselves. And such a pipsqueak person is a fool. And persons that follow a fool become fooled. So those that are a little protected by knowledge won't fall for that. What to speak of when such person, you know, has a problem, a sensual problem. Or some of the other kind. You know, one of them got prevented from tax fraud. Anyway, some other kinds of behavior that's not good. So, Rishabhdev is teaching those yogis, just as he's teaching his sons how to be future, whatever they're going to be. Some became kings. Some became brahmanas. Some became Uttama Paramahansa Sannyasis. The Navi Yogendras are 9 of the 100 sons of Rishabdev. And they appear again in the 11th canto, Bhagavatam. Highly elevated, perfectly realized persons. So, for the instruction of the yogis, even if the mystic perfections come, other than for the service of the Lord, that's a big, you know, if there's service to the Lord, something may be utilized, and if there's not service to the Lord, you don't utilize. That's all. Here's an example from Mahabharata. Prabhupada would refer to this. When it came to the Rajasuya Yajna, Jitendra's remembering, Prabhupada's instructing us on this. With the Rajasuya Yajna, an enormous amount of wealth was required. So Krishna had the solution. He informed the Pandavas, there's a place far up in the mountains where there's a big pile of gold, golden plates and implements and ornaments that there was a big yajna, and after the yajna they just like trashed it and walked away. And people just left it there because it wasn't theirs. And Krishna said, you can go there and you can gather the gold, and then the gold can be used in the yajna. So if it's not for some service to the personality of Godhead, you don't need it. It just sits there. If it's for some service to the personality of Godhead, you can utilize it. So it's not just because some wealth comes, now is an opportunity to do something. If there's some, of course there's always service to Krishna. So wealth can immediately be deployed in Krishna's service. Now what about mystic powers? If there's some service to Krishna, otherwise it just sits there, neglected. At some point in time, if called upon, it can be utilized. That's what we're hearing. And in text 2, there's a reason given by Shukadeva Goswami, and it's caution about our dear friend the mind. Our dear friend, the mind. Of course, the mind can be our worst enemy too. Doesn't Krishna say that? The mind can be the best friend or the worst enemy. So let's do the worst enemy part. What's the worst enemy? Huh? Sense gratification. I want to enjoy. That's why we come here to the material world. We don't belong here. Well, why do we come here? Misuse of our free will, and here we are thinking, I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy. I want to enjoy. And over there are some mystic powers. I want to enjoy. Tendency, so if you don't have mystic powers, no problem. And if you have mystic powers, then there's the tendency of the mind to abandon the mood of service and go to the mood of enjoyment, independent of Krishna, although the mystic powers came from Krishna. Just as anything comes from Krishna. Opulence comes from Krishna. Objects of the senses come from Krishna. He's the enjoyer of those objects, and the senses are meant for serving he who is the enjoyer of the objects of the senses, not me. But the tendency is there. And so, I'll just read again. Those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's actions. You've heard that before, right? Like, you know, a practical example. Supposing, I mean, it may happen every now and then, something disturbs you. You know, maybe once a few years, something disturbs you. Maybe. What should you do when something disturbs you? Here's some nice instruction. Observe the mind. not only like run to get rid of that thing that's disturbing the mind, that's, you know, fruitive action. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to remove that thing that's disturbing my mind. Watch the mind's action and see what's behind the mind going there, thinking, instead of, here's some opportunity for service, or here's some reminder from Krishna that I'm not the enjoyer, that he's the enjoyer, and here's an example. This is not very enjoyable, is it? Is there some opportunity for service to Krishna? Is there some lesson from Krishna for me in this? Go behind whatever that disturbance is and see, what's the disturbance? What's behind, you know, this configuration of material duality that's there at the moment and how I'm feeling about it? What's behind that? I'm the enjoyer. And this isn't enjoyable, at least according to my sensibilities. It's not how I would plan things. So I'm disturbed. And then there are some things, you get a little refined. There are some things that don't disturb us, that to other people it's disturbing. But this thing is disturbing. So what is it about, you learn something about yourself, you know, your attachments or your stuff that tells you that's distressful. Instead of, well, you know, minimally, what does Krishna say? You tolerate it. Tungstatiksha sva bharata. Tatiksha. So if you tolerate it, means I don't like get involved. I don't get sucker punched into the maya. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me. So I can kick you in the face. That's what Prabhupada said. Maya is beckoning. I forget which of the epics. Yeah, it's Moby Dick. Isn't it where he's strapped onto the whale and he's motioning with his arm like that? Come on and enjoy me. I think it's in the Iliad and the Odyssey. I think it's Siren or whatever it is. She's beckoning. Come on and it's Maya. Come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. Come on. Come on. And Maya knows exactly where our attachment, you know, what our stuff is. She knows. So she knows how to get us. Come on and enjoy me. So a yogi, an aspiring transcendentalist watches the mind. Not just like see which things the mind is attracted to and the other things the mind's kind of neutral towards. And the things that the mind likes to be the enjoyer of. You know, it behind that is this spirit of independent enjoyment. I'll repeat something that I've said many times, but it's Prabhupada's story that's appropriate here. I believe it was in New York. Anyway, it's wherever it was. At one time, in the afternoon, Prabhupada was with a group of devotees. In his schedule, part of the afternoon was for receiving guests that would come to see him, and if there were no guests, he would have a little darshan with the devotees. So, it was darshan. And Prabhupada was having fun. He asked the devotees, what's the difference between you and me? And the devotees were saying so many things. And it was like a very jolly time. Prabhupada, you're this. Prabhupada, you're that. Then Prabhupada had a point. He said, the difference is you can fall down and I cannot. Everyone, Jai Prabhupada. You can fall, we can fall down and you cannot. So then it was time for RT. They went to RT and, the evening class, RT was over. Prabhupada stood in front of the altar with his hands folded. You've seen pictures of Prabhupada standing like that. And the devotee right next to him, his secretary, noticed that Prabhupada was reciting some prayers, you know, very softly. Then he went, Vyasa-san and Jai Radha Madhava gave class, and then went back to his room after the class. So the secretary said, Prabhupada, may I ask? You were reciting, it looked like you were reciting some prayers when greeting the deities. May I know what those prayers were? And Prabhupada said, yes, I was praying to Krishna that I never fall down, that he always keep me engaged in his devotional service. And then the devotee said, but Prabhupada, just before the class you said, the difference between us and you is that you'll never fall down. And then Prabhupada said, now you know why. Because I'm always praying. My dear Lord Krishna, please keep me always engaged in your devotional service. Please protect me from Maya. So, similarly, Rishabhdev is taking that spirit, and that's why Prabhupada similarly is referring to the Bhagavad Gita verse, chapter 18, text 5. When you're on this very elevated position, when, oh, when will that day come? But when that day comes, it's not that the things that are purifying, that allow for that spiritual elevation to take place, now you don't have to do them anymore. You must continue to do them anymore. So similarly, the vigilance to not be an enjoyer of things, whether it's sense gratification things or mystic power things or the desire for liberation things, each one of them, one is vigilant. One watches the mind very carefully to make sure the mind doesn't go there. Because conditioned tendency is the mind wants to go there. There's some quotes. In 1970, there are a number of letters in the Prabhupada's letter book written by Prabhupada's answer. We don't see the question, because Prabhupada repeats the question and the answer. So, Revati Nandan and Jagadish and Upendra all asked Prabhupada. Apparently there was some, like, you know, devotee discussion going on about, did the jivas come from Goloka Vrindavan and then come into this world? Because, you know, the classic question, I don't want to like have a whole class on this. I mean, question answer session, please. But just making reference, you know, the fall of the jiva question. So they were asking those questions, and Prabhupada gave explicit answers to their explicit questions. And Prabhupada states explicitly, even in Goloka, there is a tendency for sense gratification. Doesn't say one acts on it, but, you know, the marginal tendency of the living entity is there, and the marginal condition of the living entity is their constitutional position. They're marginal, which means you can say they have propensity for engaging with the external energy or engaging with the internal energy. More explicitly, the propensity for sense gratification, because otherwise you have no business in the material energy. Even in the spiritual world. So here's Rishabhdev instructing the yogis how to not only don't pursue mystic powers, but if mystic powers come, you don't utilize them unless it's in service to the Supreme Lord. So, and that's what the message of the purport of text 2. Even one who is renounce the world and has taken sannyas should not renounce chanting Hare Krishna, those activities that bring one to the position of spiritual elevation. That's how he's applying this 18.5 Bhagavad Gita. And the yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. This is the goal. The goal is not goal is engage in devotional service. And if you're following the process of mysticism, or whatever the process is that you're following, the goal is to engage in unalloyed devotional service. Now I'm going to read one last thing. This is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary translated by Bhanu Swami on these two verses. Very quickly, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Maharaj Pariksit asks his question. We know what the question is. He's paraphrasing the answer. O great soul, Bhagava, for the Atmaramas, anyone not know what Atmarama means? Atmarama. Atma is the self. Rama means satisfied or pleasure. Those who are receiving pleasure from within, perfected. They're not looking for something outside, they're finding happiness within. For the Atmaramas, who have burned up the seeds of karma by knowledge, remember Prabhupada wrote like that in the purport, from bhakti, knowledge arises. First canto, chapter 2. From bhakti, knowledge arises, naturally. And that knowledge extinguishes karma. Not knowledge standing on its own, but that knowledge that arises from bhakti extinguishes karma. The seeds of karma, by knowledge arising from the best of yoga. The powers should not be harmful, since enjoyment which arises suddenly is not harmful. That's Maharaj Pariksit. So, you know, we're going along in devotional service and here comes some facility for devotional service. Utilize the facility for devotional service. Hey, mystic powers. Maybe there's some way to use mystic powers in Krishna's service. So why didn't he? Just in principle, it was no. Here's his translation. Shukadev said, you have spoken correctly, but in this world, intelligent people do not at all put faith in the unsteady mind, which is like a degraded, cunning person. We don't put faith in a degraded, cunning person, do we? Similarly, we don't put faith in the mind. Well, here I am in this position of detachment, so here I go. His commentary, paraphrased, you have spoken correctly. The mystic powers should not give problems, however. Intelligent persons never put faith in the mind. Why? The mind at every moment takes on a new condition. Becoming pure, the mind immediately becomes impure. The degraded, or kirata, cunning person, after showing friendship, kills the trusting person by robbing him. After showing its purity with power not to be influenced by lust and anger, one day the mind makes the sadhaka, who has become lax in effort, to fall down by a sudden appearance of lust or anger. Though the low-born person constantly studies dharma and shows good character and is trusted even in the treasury, he sometimes commits theft, since his nature is difficult to give up. Similarly, though one trusts the mind, which has become purified by sense control and mind control and has become fixed in hearing and meditation, the uncontrolled mind becomes absorbed in sinful objects when given the opportunity and takes away discriminating knowledge. Pretty clear, isn't it? Be very cautious. The metaphor that's used in the translation that Prabhupada has given is the person who's captured an animal doesn't put faith in that animal because the animal may go away. So you get the comparison. Here is the cunning person, the kirata, degraded cunning person, Oh, he looks like he's become reformed. He's, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Exhibiting nice sense control, mind control, put him in the treasury, and then the treasury is emptied. And then the temple president has to come along and, you know, and everyone goes, oh, why did you do that? They're such a nice Prabhu. Just look at all this nice and nice and nice and, you know, try to be a temple president for a while. It's tough. But anyway, try to be a transcendental yogi for a while. It's, Rishabdev is instructing the mystic yogis or the aspirants for mystic siddhis. One, don't aspire for them. Two, if they come, don't utilize them unless it's for service to Krishna. Does this remind you of something from Canto 1, Chapter 2? I'll remind you of the verse. And then we're done. Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartotayopa kalpate nartasya dharmaikantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. That's the verse. And it says, it's two parts. It's coming after that one of those yenat ma supraseedati, how to become fully satisfied. Right after that, dharma, religious activity, should never, never, never be performed for acquiring sense gratification. Okay. I'm following dharma, not for sense gratification. And look at this. Because of my dharmic activity, here comes some facility. So the second part says, and if the facility comes, not because you wanted it to come, but it just comes, never use it in sense gratification, but only in Krishna's service. Only for, the aspiration should be not just, not liberation, Prabhupada translated as ultimate liberation, meaning pure devotional service. And in a position of pure devotional service, or cultivating pure devotional service, here comes some facility. And it may not be, you know, money or opulence. It may be some honor. Oh, you're such a nice kirtan singer, or you're so renounced, or you're so detached, or you're so this, or you're so that. Look out. The mind's tendency is, yes, it's true. Finally, I found an intelligent person. They are able to recognize what advancement is. Ah. Down. One goes very quickly. That's Maya's sucker punch. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me. So I can kick you in the face. So, Rishabdev, this teaching is, even it's these subtle things. You know, we don't even think about mystic. I mean, I don't know of any devotee that's engaging in devotional service because they want mystic powers. But supposing there is somebody, because, you know, this thing, Prabhupada said, Swamiji, can you show some magic? You have some mystic powers. He said, yeah. Bring the sannyasis. And here's the mystic power. Greater than producing gold is changing these, you know, fallen personalities into exalted personalities. Removing from their heart the seed of material desire. That's mystical. That's my mystic power. So we are, to whatever degree, we're fixed in Krishna consciousness. There's some endowment from Krishna that allows that protection from whatever the things were that we were doing before. And stay fixed in Krishna consciousness. So don't be an enjoyer of, or don't become proud. we can appreciate with gratitude the gift that Krishna has given us and stay fixed in the service to Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example of a queen, a faithful queen. And she resides in the palace of the king because she's the queen. And the king provides ladies-in-waiting or attendants or whatever they're called. And wherever the queen goes, here and there in the palace, following behind her, there are the ladies in waiting to serve her every desire. But the queen isn't interested in the facilities that they can provide. The queen is interested in one thing, the king. Similarly, for the devotee is interested in one thing. At least the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, we're taught to cultivate one thing. Favorable service to Krishna. Anukulyena Krishnanushilana. That's what we're taught. It's just that one thing. And whatever else there is, if it's in relation to this one thing, it's of interest, and if it doesn't in relation to this one thing, it's not of interest. And things may come, and we're interested in this one thing. With caution that the mind can very easily go into this other mode to our greatest enemy. The mind that goes to Krishna in the mood of service to Krishna, the greatest friend. Here comes facility, here comes some fruits of our devotional service, the mind's tendency to be the enjoyer of those things is very strong. So just, therefore, Shukadeva Goswami says, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action. Good lesson.
My question is related to Bhakti Derek's question yesterday.
Isn't the Bhagavatam just wonderful?
Yes.
Bhagavatam is just wonderful. We just like hang out with Srimad Bhagavatam and go back to Godhead. Go ahead.
About happiness, and can we enjoy the happy experiences in Krishna consciousness?
Yeah.
That was his question. And I had this question yesterday, and you're bringing it up now, in terms of putting faith in the mind. So the mind creates these various experiences, you know, sometimes happy, sometimes distressed. So when we, in light of this discussion about placing faith in the mind, sometimes I do get this question from devotees. I also wonder about it sometimes. When we're experiencing some happy situation, because we know it's mixed, and if we invest our consciousness in that a lot, then we might find ourselves sorely disappointed in the very near future on account of the oscillations of the mind. So how do we know how to nicely derive happiness from our experiences in Krishna consciousness without becoming deluded?
It's really simple. And I'll give an example. The real simple is Krishna's happiness. When that meditation is spot on, that's happiness. It's the happiness of the beloved. And if attention is not spot on, very quickly it goes to the other position. Example. And I won't use you an example, I'll use some of the younger devotees that are developing their taste for kirtan. My advice to them is for the pleasure of Krishna. And if it's not for the pleasure of Krishna, you may derive something that you can call happiness by singing, and people go, oh, you sing so nicely. Or while you're singing, thinking, people must be appreciating how I'm singing so nicely. All of those meditations, like you said, there's a mix. You go there, and bhakti is that the real happiness isn't there. There's some other happiness, just an ego trip happiness. That's just like a crash landing. The real happiness is gone. Because the real happiness is Krishna's happiness. So that's the test. And we cultivate bhakti through the activities of bhakti. While other things may also come. We vigilantly watch the mind to Krishna's happiness only. And that's the greatest happiness. It's really, you know, the application may be difficult because our mind is tricky, but the principle is simple. Be happy. Chant and be happy. But, you know, what kind of happiness? Krishna's happiness, happiness. Love. Bhakti. And I'll just repeat something I said the other day, but it was really nice, powerful. Yogeshwar, who is working in the yoga field, you know, that bridge preaching thing, he's frustrated because people use the terminology bhakti and they haven't a clue. Not even on the external plane, what to speak of the internal plane. And no, and he's a revolutionary. He, you know, he doesn't like it. Anyway. Yeah, I'm into bhakti. Let's go have pizza and a beer. It was what he said. So, the kirtan is a nice way, even to say just japa, or your reading of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, are worshipping the deity. One can be worshipping the deity, you know, not thinking about the deity's pleasure, thinking about something else, or thinking about how people are watching me worshipping the deity or something like that, instead of, you know, the pleasure of Krishna. So these brahminical, especially brahminical activities, are a good way to watch the mind and see and cultivate. And so because there's mix, there's going to be a mix. And then we bring the mind back. The sadhana of one who is cultivating devotion and practice. We stay fixed on thinking of Krishna's happiness. And whenever the mind goes somewhere else, it, you know, it goes down the tube. The vortex is quick, a little bit, and then next thing you know it accelerates, and next thing you know it's really fast and it's down. It just happens so quickly. So, that's our cultivation. Krishna's happiness. It's really delightful to cultivate. Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your class. In the fifth canto, Jatabharata tells us one way of controlling the mind. He says you must render service to a devotee.
Yeah.
Right? So I was
Rishabhdev says the same.
Right. And I was thinking that for that, we have to have trust. Right? Trust is an important factor.
Supposing somebody doesn't have trust and they render some service.
Mm-hmm.
It's still powerful. It's more powerful when there's trust. You know, like the connection between the heart and the service is stronger when there's trust. But go ahead.
So my question is, the trust that we place in someone, I'm just getting this reflection now, it can be based on what our mind tells us. It has to be based on intelligence. Right?
Yeah, even go further. It has to be based on reality.
So if you could speak on that a little bit, please.
Sure. So in the world, this is as you were asking your question, supposing in the world there's a pure devotee. When Prabhupada was on the planet, just his presence on the planet was a benefit to the world. Whether people had faith or not faith, whether people interacted with him or not, didn't interact with him. Those that did, great. those that did so with faith, greater. Then those that did so with, you know, full surrender, even greater, and so on. But just his presence on earth was very fortunate for the earth planet. Now, Prabhupada is unique in many, 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 many ways. Unique. But the principle is, let's say, you know, come way down to where we are, and our service is to be examples of what the teachings of our founder Acharya are, and to help nurture faith by our example and by our words. Just, we're faith nurturers. And the degree to which there is some faith that becomes awakened through, what does Prabhupada write in Bhagavad Gita? Faith is created in the association of devotees. So we're devotees. We're trying to be devotees. And we're trying to follow Prabhupada's teachings and disseminate those teachings and live by those teachings. So that's helping, to the degree that we're doing that, it's helping to nurture faith. I don't know if I'm answering your question. I'm having a nice time meditating on trying to serve Prabhupada. Does it address your question? Better what?
Higher than placing trust through intelligence is placing it by reality.
Yeah,
okay. So I was trying to understand that.
You know, there's this teaching that there's four levels of consciousness: sensual, mental, intellectual, and spiritual. So spiritual is reality. That's what I meant by reality. So if the senses say it feels good, wait a while, it won't feel good. Then the mind, it's also unsteady. The intelligence is a place where the values that we hold in life, that's, you know, it's not so variable. It's beyond a lot of variations. Like, say, supposing someone values compassion, or they value truthfulness, or they value something. That determines what their mind and senses do. It dictates to the mind and senses. It's more stable. But then there's the absolute reality. Because the intelligence can become superseded by the mind and senses. Even a person of discrimination, just like is being said here, can become overwhelmed. So, yes, it's true. Be cautious about the mind. Investing too much value in the dictation of the mind. And yes, you're right, that the intelligence, you know, the capacity to discriminate. Even the mind says, whatever it says, it may say anger, it may say lust, it may say greed, it may say I like and I don't like. Over here is the value there. That which is so then there's this then the spiritual reality. Take the position of a very new person. Something that I learned as a very new devotee. I don't really have the capacity to understand who's advanced and who's not advanced. And that came from looking up to somebody who I thought was really advanced. Because they, you know, symptoms looked like they were really advanced. And the next thing you knew, they were gone. And then I realized I don't have the capacity. So reality is greater than my capacity to discriminate. Oh, that's, I don't have the proper yardsticks. I don't have the purification. I don't have the means. I don't have the acumen. I don't have the adhikar. So I know some people that place too much value in their intelligence And they go around with a swagger, with their intelligence. So reality is above that. It's a spiritual position. And as one becomes more spiritually qualified, the capacity to discern reality, but we actually move with that anyway. We have some faith in there's a higher reality, the Adau Shraddha principle. I may not know with my intelligence what that is, but I have some intrinsic faith. Some basic faith. There's something beyond all this. And then proper guidance from the proper source. Not just because my intelligence agrees. Not just because my intelligence agrees. It aligns with my intelligence, so now I accept. But it may not align with my intelligence. My discerning capacity. Hang on. He's still like digesting. We're okay? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for the class. I didn't have a question, but I wanted to share a very nice experience I had. I really love when you share your Prabhupada stories because it really helps us remind us.
You like hearing Prabhupada stories, and then what?
I like when you speak about Prabhupada stories, you know, okay. Sharing. And it really helps us remind us how great he is. And
I couldn't do anything. Speak slowly and clearly. I consider me a half-deaf person. Speak slowly and clearly, please. Thanks.
Yes, Maharaj.
I got the first part. Don't say that part again. You like hearing Prabhupada stories, and?
Especially the one on prayer. Praying to God.
Now you're asking a question about prayer.
No. I wanted to share an experience I had.
You want to share an experience about praying? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So when I was growing up, my mom used to always tell me to always pray to God.
Speak slowly and clearly.
When I was growing up,
that's
my
good.
Mom,
you were growing up.
Okay. Used to always tell me that I should always pray to God.
Okay.
For everything. Things he takes away, things he does, he gives as well.
I didn't get it.
Things that God gives and also...
God gives and God takes away.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
So, one day I was coming home from work and it was like a blizzard out and it was like 12:30 at night.
I didn't get it. You speak slowly and clearly. I'm sorry, I'm just like half.
No, it's okay.
I'm sorry. Slowly and clearly.
So, one day I was coming from work.
Yeah.
On the late night.
Okay, got that.
And there was a pretty bad blizzard.
That was a what? A lizard?
Blizzard.
A blizzard, okay.
And I was waiting for one of the buses to come take me to the Howard station to
okay.
go home. And I also was going down with a big fever, so I wasn't feeling very well. Mine was very agitated.
Okay.
So...
And
finally,
then,
the last bus came. It was supposed to be the last bus of the night, but it said out of service.
Oh.
So it just went past me. It didn't stop by, you know, or anything. So I was like, oh, wow, that's like the last bus, you know. I'm supposed to get home. It's a blizzard out, and it's really cold. I'm sick. So I felt Maya was telling me, you know, hey, you know, you should just walk home. You know, you get home eventually. Just walk home. And so I was going through that, and I was all of a sudden I felt my mom's voice from within saying, pray.
Okay.
So...
The bus did reverse and came back and stopped for you.
No. I wish it did, but...
Power of prayer.
So instead of walking home, I just literally got down on my knees and really started praying.
Right on the sidewalk there?
Right in front of everybody. There
okay,
was
fantastic.
A red light. And I was praying to Krishna, please engage me in your service so I can take care of my body. I wanted to go home and rest so I can serve
yeah,
him tomorrow.
Sure.
So literally 10 minutes later, a bus came out of nowhere. Krishna just manifested another bus driver in the bus. And he came in, so I'm like, oh wow, like, this is supposed to be the last bus. Like, why is another bus coming? So I got in, go for my wallet. My wallet wasn't even there. My wallet, I left it at work. So I had no money. And I was telling the bus driver, listen, I left my wallet at home, you know, or at work. And he was like, it's okay, it's cold. It looked like he was out there praying, so come in. So he really, he just accepted me, you know, to come in. And but the fact that he said that it looked like he was outside praying, really, I really felt like, you know, how important it is to really pray to God and to Krishna. And got to the higher station, and still I needed money to get on another bus to get home. And this lady saw me looking around. She's like, are you okay? Can I help you anything? She's like, yeah, I'm trying to get home, but I don't have any money, and I left my wallet. I'm feeling really sick. And she was like, oh, please, just come in. I'll let you in. Please, don't worry about it. Just go home. You look sick.
This is bus number two?
Bus number two.
Okay.
And that was it. That day, I really value how important it is to really pray to God. Regardless of religion, just praying to God is extremely important. And I just wanted to share that with you and everybody.
Well, I have an idea hearing what you just said. There's a big city called Chicago, and maybe you could pray to Krishna for bringing some of those people in the big city of Chicago to Krishna's service and see what happens. Power of prayer. And to be an instrument for that, to help make my heart pure, and that's a nice prayer too. Okay, looking at the clock. Anything over here, ladies? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki.